Welcome to those that
Thanks,
have
Jim.
joined us since we first
Cheers, Jim.
started, and a particular welcome to any newcomers or visitors to our meeting. Welcome, and we hope you hear something positive that might encourage you to keep coming back. And like I said, we have a speaker tonight, and we have someone to introduce our speaker tonight, who's going to share for 40-45 minutes. So Jodie, it's over to you. So if you'd like to introduce our speaker, please. Thank you.
I'm Jodie, I'm an addict.
Hi, Jodie.
Hi, well, our speaker today is somebody I met maybe 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago. I met her at a critical time in her life. And we had mutual friends. But our friendship grew pretty fast, I think, to a point where we would just be able to sit. I mean, it's somebody that I feel so comfortable with that I don't feel like I have to fill the void. And we have done work together to make ourselves our best selves. I love her. And here's Kim.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kim, and I'm an addict.
Hello, Kim.
Hi, Kim.
I want to thank you, Jay, for calling and asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, and thank you, Jodie, for introducing me. This is my second time on this meeting, and I was just quiet in the background listening. There's still a part of me that still likes to stay in the background. In my experience, strength and hope is what I hope to give you today is that, you know, there's always hope for recovery and for life to get better beyond our wildest dreams. Everything I have in my life for me is as a result of working the steps and practicing spiritual principles from the steps and traditions and concepts in my life, in all areas of my life. You know, I grew up very isolated. I'm the youngest of five kids. My parents got divorced. I was abandoned. I had a very horrific childhood. You know, I was shy. I kind of was always withdrawn. And, you know, somewhere I created, you know, what I've learned is that, you know, I have a disease of perception. And that in order to deal with that disease of perception, in order to trying to function, I use drugs. The drugs were my solution. You know, the drugs took the pain away. The drugs kind of made it so that I can feel like I'm okay and that I didn't care what other people thought. And through looking back at my life and my childhood and where I came from, I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like I never belonged. I felt like I was less than. And the first time I ever really felt alive was that first time I got high. And there was just this sigh of relief that came over me, that just that, oh, you know, it was like that 10,000 pound weight kind of came off my shoulders of trying to please everybody else. And caring what they thought. And I just had to find another way to continue to stay at that point and be numb. And, you know, I was kind of sheltered. I, you know, during that time of that childhood, you know, my parents got divorced. Two of my older brothers were already out of the house. There was my brother, my sister, and I. And at the age of 11, was when my parents got divorced, and my father and my sister went and lived at my grandmother's. My mother, my brother, and I stayed at the house, and eventually my mother stopped coming home because her boyfriend lived halfway between her job and my house. And I was left with my 17-year-old brother, who was an active alcoholic at that point, you know, drinking very heavily. He was abusive. We lived in New York, and we went through winters with no heat. I had weeks without food. I used to look forward to my girlfriend who went to boarding school, because her mother died when she was 5. And when she'd come home on the weekends, I would go and stay at her house. It was the only reprieve that I got. And that was where I got to eat because I didn't have any food. You know, years later, I had a friend tell me, we all knew how you were living and we don't know why you did anything. And that was the first time anything was like acknowledged to me to how horrific my childhood was, because it was different from all my other siblings. And so, you know, I used to question, was I making this stuff up and not really trusting myself and trusting who I am? And I just kind of learned to be invisible, which is kind of hard. I'm 6'3". I was 5'11" when I was in the sixth grade, so I was always kind of big. So it's kind of hard to do visible, but I found a way, you know. And drugs were what helped me to be invisible from me and what I thought about myself. You know, when my father, but eventually my father found out that my mother was no longer coming home, you know, called my mother. There was, you know, just the family drama that goes on. And eventually I ended up back with my mother and we moved into her boyfriend's house and everything was about them. I felt like, you know, I was always discarded, you know, and the only relief that I got was getting high. But I also felt that I couldn't count on anybody else. So I kind of used in this way of still hoping and grabbing for control. And because I felt like there was never anybody there that had my back. So I did enough to get numb and stay numb so that I could still function and stay under the radar. You know, and it was, you know, moved around a lot once I was back with my mother. And so like every 2 years I was at a different school and, you know, so it was really hard to kind of really make friends. So I was kind of isolated and withdrawn. But I had met this one girl and her brother used to supply the, you know, drugs in the community. And he thought that I was kind of cute. So he'd give her a better cut if she brought me with her. So we would go and, you know, so she could get a better cut. And, you know, in through my using, I've overdosed and I've justified some of the situations that I've gotten into. You know, like I've overdosed once, but everybody does that. I only get really wasted on the weekends. Everybody does that. You know, it's the weekend. That's what it's about. And I kind of kept this facade. So, and when I met her brother, you know, he was actually down at the local beach and in the parking lot beating up a cop car, because they were ticketing him for drinking in public. And, you know, cause it was a small little town. Everybody kind of knew everybody. His family was well known in the area. And, so they've just given tickets out the window as he's like rocking the cop car. You know, I don't know why they didn't arrest us back in those days, but I guess we ruined it for a lot of people today. One of the thinking I've had, we got away with a lot. And I eventually married him, you know, so the guy goes to show you like how well my thinking was that if, you know, I married him because he was the first one to ask and I didn't think that anybody would ever ask. I thought that little of myself, and it was just about keeping myself numb and out of the limelight. And after that overdose, I had stopped drinking alcohol. And, you know, so that day that he was beating up the cop car, you know, afterwards we went up to the local bar and he says, you know, we'll have a drink. And I said, oh, I don't drink. He says, get her a drink, and gave it to me. He says, either you drink it or you wear it. So of course I drank it. I didn't want it dumped on me. And there I was going again. You know, and what I realized that what I did was I continued to hang out with people that used more than I did so that I looked okay, you know, because it was always about this thing that I've seen society has put out there too, that, you know, I need to look okay. I need to be, you know, I need to fit in. I need to be a part of. And, you know, so we ended up getting married and, you know, ended up having kids right away. I have 3 children. They're all adults today. And it wasn't easy. You know, there's a piece of me today that I look back through Hindsight and Recovery, that I really believe that, you know, in our step work, it talks about, you know, when God intervenes in our life and us not knowing it. And I believe that the two of us were put together because there is no reason that we should have survived using together. There's no way that we should have lasted being married 31 years before he passed and be able to be in recovery. And, you know, he went into recovery first and it was really hard. I mean, I've been through a lot more things in my recovery and have stayed clean than I ever went through while I was out there using. You know, as horrific as my childhood was, you know, I survived it and it made me the person that I am today. You know, and I look in hindsight and every character defect that I have at one point in my life was an asset. You know, at one point, because all of those things I went through and experienced helped me to be who I am today and helped me to survive. You know, that being shy and insecure, you know, kept me from maybe being a lot, using a lot more harder drugs than I did. You know, when I got clean in 1984, you know, my husband had 3 years more clean time than I did. He got clean first, went through, you know, treatment. And, you know, so I kind of came in through the back door and meetings for family members and kind of in that realm. And, you know, they used to say back in the 80s in New York, if you didn't shoot dope, you weren't a real addict. So I gathered, you know, and through my life, I was an evidence gatherer. So I gathered the evidence and they were giving me permission to say that I wasn't an addict. But in order for us to go out, we needed to go to a meeting. So I was sitting in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous for 3 years, you know, weekly. And, you know, everybody loved me, you know, even though I'd be like, I'm not an addict. And they'd say, you know, well, good. We're glad you're here. You know, so one of the key messages that I've gotten for myself is, you know, don't quit before the miracle happens. And if you bring the body, the mind will follow. You know, because at some point the light goes on. At some point we, you know, I got to hear something or I was gathering information and whether I was comparing at that point didn't really matter because I was getting information of what other people in these rooms were sharing and looking and watching other people's lives change and what being a member of Narcotics Anonymous can do for someone. And I, you know, I had realized at one point that, you know, if I'm really supporting my husband and I'm doing this and I don't have a problem, why am I using it? I made the decision to stop using everything. And I was clean for, you know, about 2 years without surrendering to being an addict. But again, still sitting in the rooms, working a program for the family members. And, you know, life on life terms shows up. And life on life terms is always going to show up. You know, there's things in life that we go through that are just part of it. And, you know, like I said, I had three kids. I had a son who had, you know, all my kids have learning disabilities. I used through all my pregnancies. I don't know if that's a result of that or not. But I kind of grew up in these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. My kids grew up in these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, we ran our household on the traditions. And, you know, my kids had a voice, but they didn't have a vote, you know, and we made final decisions. And what I got to see was that, you know, through the chaos of trying to deal with my son with learning disabilities and behavior problems and, you know, not having anybody to really mentor me and show me how to parent, I had no rules or any guidelines. I had what parents leave, that they don't act the way, because I thought it was me that they left and, you know, they just leave. And I tried to do everything I could to not be my parents. And, you know, I was walking across the street one day. I think my son was thrown out of a, you know, his fifth school or something like that for behavior. You know, he's thrown out of kindergarten. He was, you know, and I was walking across the street and I heard this little voice in my head just say, it'd be really great to get high right now and not deal with it. And it was the first time that I identified as being an addict, that that was what the drugs were doing for me and that I was using them as an escape. And that all the stuff that I had watched other people go through and share their experiences in the rooms finally made a click for me. And, you know, in doing so, you know, I surrendered. I surrendered to being an addict. I surrendered to saying, like, okay, I see this, and like the running and the everything that addiction does for me, that keeps me isolated and on the outside. And I got a sponsor, and I started working steps in the realm of the whole addiction, you know, and, you know, really started to begin to look at me. And as doing that step work and, you know, accepting my powerlessness, that I can't change the thoughts that necessarily run through my head, but I can change the behavior in which I respond to them. You know, I can pick up the phone and I can call somebody when I have those crazy thoughts. There was a point during that time where an awareness that I had, that I had had, you know, I was just feeling really overwhelmed and, you know, life on life's terms. And I packed all my bags and had them by the door waiting for my husband to come home, and I was going to walk out on my family. And that was when I realized I was doing to my children what my mother did to me. And that was one of those big pivotal points for me in my life. And I started some counseling in being able to look at that stuff. You know, you know, at this point, I kind of had blocked out all my childhood and that lifetime. I just say, yeah, they all left. And I made excuses for it. And it was the first time I started really talking and looking at what some of those pains were for me and the harms caused, you know, and the stuff that I minimized, that, you know, really began to see that I minimized me. And I started to wanting to own and become myself and continue to look at that stuff and let go of some of these things that really weren't the truth. You know, I gathered a lot of lies along the way. And, you know, the lies that, you know, I'm not enough and that they don't care about me and I'm not important. And, because those were really deep ingrained in me, and that I am someone and I am worthy. You know, I didn't have those kinds of affirmations and spiritual principles in my life. And I needed to change those tapes that I had. I needed to destroy the tapes that I had. I needed to acknowledge, like, yes, that was what my childhood was, but it's no longer happening today. And today I have a choice. So in working the steps and accepting my powerlessness, I then became powerful. I then began to have other options to myself. The more meetings I went to, the more I stepped outside of my square of comfort, of what I thought was safe, the more people I met. You know, the bigger my foundation, the higher point of freedom. You know, I finally got that understanding that the more people I allow that are in recovery and on this same spiritual path that I allow into my life, you know, and that I continue to take the risks with, because I have to continue to take the risks, because I am still going to get disappointed. Just because I work this program doesn't mean that somebody else, we're all human, and that I'm not going to get disappointed, that somebody's going to do something that doesn't feel right for me, or that doesn't, but I can speak my truth and talk about it is what I've learned today. That I can, one of the biggest things that I've learned is that I am a strong, powerful woman, and that I have a lot to offer. And I didn't always think that. And that is only as a result of working the steps and doing a fourth step and looking at, like, what did I do? What did I gather? How did I gather these tapes? You know, and then be doing, you know, sharing it with somebody else and finding out I'm not the only one that thought this way and not the only one that, you know, behaved in this way. And then trying to look at, like, how it could be different. You know, working step 6 and 7 and, you know, living and how it can be different and turning up the volume. You know, in my sixth step, you know, sixth step is, you know, some people struggle with 4. I struggled with 6 because for me, you know, having to really listen to what it is that I say to myself, to what I do to me. I was so focused on look what they did to me and being a victim, to having to switch to look what I did to me. Look at how I minimized me. Look at how I chose to believe what they said over the truth of what I really knew. You know, coming to believe in that power greater than myself, I always believed that there was something bigger and greater than myself. You know, I have a memory of being like 5 years old and not being allowed to leave the yard and just kind of laying in the front yard with my feet in the sidewalk and looking at the sky, big blue sky, beautiful clouds, and just thinking, you know, there's something up there moving me around and having all of this happen, that there was more out of that, you know, that I didn't have control over, but yet I can still influence, you know, and I look at today that's, you know, that awareness, I didn't understand it, but today for me, that's where I see that, you know, I have a power greater than myself that, you know, in my third step that I turned my will and my life over to, that he's not going to give back to me. So, but he gives me free will and he lets me choose hard. And sometimes I choose hard. So even today, you know, I go through experiences sometimes going, oh, this feels like a little drama that I created, you know, by maybe not standing in my truth. You know, so through a lot of that other work, you know, like working with other women to change those lies and speaking with other people to change those tapes and create something different and become the warrior that I am today to continue to persevere no matter what life throws at me. How I came to move to Florida was, you know, at one point in my husband's recovery, Benjamin Franklin became his higher power. And he lost $250,000 in a poor business deal. And anything I said, I got, you know, he would say to me, well, you don't support me and you don't, you know, so I kind of would take this back seat to things. And, you know, and I just continued to really just work my program and focus on me and I'm powerless. I, you know, he's making his decisions. And you know, and he told me that we kind of had lost everything. You know, we had a couple businesses and we had to sell them and to get out of debt. And I said, well, if I'm going to dumpster dive, if we have no money, I said, if I, you know, I guess I'll be eating in finer restaurants was what I said. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, if I'm dumpster diving, I'm going to a good restaurant. You know, I mean, what was I going to do? I couldn't change anything. So I'm really grateful that I really chose to work my steps, you know, and work them hard and get really clear to what the exact nature of my wrong is. You know, because back when I first time I did the steps, we were writing the steps and people were saying, what are you writing the steps for? We were called the writers. There was a group of us. We were writing together. We were supporting each other. And we really created a strong group. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous gave me, that foundation. It gave me, you know, the people in my life who loved and supported me that I was always looking for. You know, to give me, you know, that encouragement that I could be something, you know, being 5'11" in sixth grade, if I had somebody mentor me in basketball, imagine the basketball player I could have been, you know, being 6'3" and, you know, just that encouragement. But I didn't have any of that stuff. You know, I was discouraged to doing things. I wanted to be a model. And my mother said, oh, you know, that's not, you know, and she discouraged me. And, you know, it was that negativity. Narcotics Anonymous gave me that love and reassurance and that push to saying I could be and do anything, you know. And I believe that us as addicts are some are, you know, God's greatest gifts, that he really gets to see his work through us. You know, all the things that we persevere through, you know, and get to see that change and from the levels that with the different levels that we come and walk into these rooms and to what we've become today and the encouragement that we give to other people, it just amazes me. And I feel so truly blessed because I live in a rural area. I go to 2 meetings a week. You know, and I keep saying I'm going to do more of these meetings because I probably get more out of them. I go to meetings that have literature because I can't say that I can't leave not getting something. I sometimes still feel isolated, but it's where I live, you know, and I need to go to meetings where I live. And I'm grateful for the foundation. I know people all over the world. I utilize those people. You know, I can, you know, travel to go to meetings. It's, you know, it's just amazing the things that I've gotten to experience that when I was getting high, I would only talk about I'm going to do, and I would dream about doing them, and I would think about doing them, and they never would have happened without making this decision. You know, I watch my kids today grow up, and, you know, they're all different. You know, as I grew in recovery, my husband and I grew in recovery, they grew. We moved down after he... you know, we lost everything. We couldn't afford to live in New York. My mother's health failed, so I moved down here. to Florida to help take care of my mother. And my recovery actually got a really, my spirituality part of my recovery really got a boost moving down here to Florida. You know, we got to connect. It was kind of like back to like old school recovery here. And you know, I had a lot to offer to experience other women that didn't have time. There weren't a lot of women. There's still not in my area. But we really grew and flourished, and we were able to really, like, even enhance our relationship and continue to grow in my relationship with my husband. And, you know, I went from taking care of my mother to right to taking care of my husband, and, you know, and he passed. And, you know, it was like my kids were grown, and it was like I was really stepping into myself. You know, I was really feeling like, yes, I've got this. I was really like recovery had really like kicked in for me at that point, you know, of all the work I had done. And then when my husband died, I kind of felt like the kickstand was kicked out from underneath me. You know, like I didn't know, because my kids were grown and now my husband's gone. My parents are gone. I have siblings, but I wasn't really close with them. You know, and it was like one of the things I went and did was after my husband passed away, I went in the closet and I took a pair of his jeans and I cut his belt loop off, because I used to walk around in my early recovery with my finger in his belt loop, fearful that he would get away. You know, and I was able to give up, you know, recovery gave me the ability to give up that belt loop, to give up those crutches, to be able to stand on my own. But he was still my safety net. He was my go-to. He was, you know, we could talk about anything. And, you know, we were very open and honest with each other. You know, and to be able to stay married for 31 years. So when he passed, it was really hard. I didn't know. It was like, okay, who do I have to be now? You know, now I felt like I had to start over again. And who am I going to be now? All on my own. I can't be, it's not that I'm a mother. It's not that I'm a wife. It's not that I'm a daughter. I'm Kim. And I don't have to ask anyone for anything. And I can live my life for me. You know, and I'll tell you, I had thoughts of going, well, you know, I can sell everything. I can pack up everything. And I can go and move. And I don't have to be a real addict. That was a thought that I had. Not that I wanted to use, but I didn't have to do this. I could just, you know, go disappear. I wanted to go disappear again. I found it very difficult, you know, to get support. I'd go to a meeting and people were like, oh, I don't know how you're doing it. I'm having a really hard time with Butch being gone. And I'd be like, really? Like, hello? Like, you're coming to me for support for the loss of my husband? That I literally had to go to a neighboring area and go to the meeting, and, you know, I had my arm stretched out and my hand out, and I just begged them, and I said, please help me get my hand back, because I've got you all at a distance, and I knew that I would have been in danger, you know. So I did what my literature has taught me to do, you know, go to a meeting and speak my truth. And I went to another area, got a home group in another area for 3 years so that I could save myself. You know, and I pissed a lot of people off because it was a struggling area. And, you know, my husband and I had the most clean time. And I don't believe that, you know, clean time is important and you have to have it. But I learned from newcomers. You know, I am no different. My literature tells me I am no different than the newcomer walking in the door. You know, and our primary purpose is to help the addict who still suffers, you know. And I was the addict who was suffering. And I felt like I couldn't get the help that I needed. But I learned in Narcotics Anonymous that I don't give up my seat for no one. But they didn't tell me not to move it. And I moved my seat. And that's exactly what I said to them. And I moved my seat. And it was really hard for me when I was said, okay, you know, then I got a job. And, you know, and I did jobs that were like crazy. I became a juvenile corrections officer, you know. And that helped me grow tremendously, because that was where I got to carry this message. Was in a juvenile facility with kids between 14 and 21, and you know, and give them dignity and respect, that stuff that we don't necessarily have, that, you know, the helping them to honor themselves. And it was just really great to watch that and be able to give that. But then they kept me working all the time. So I was like, you know, this isn't working. I want to be at meetings. I wanted to go to conventions. I wanted to be around people in recovery too, you know, because that's what keeps me clean, is that, you know, I cannot let cracks into my foundation. You know, I need to stay connected to, you know, the people in my life that continue to feed me, like Jody and Jay and Steve when he comes to the country. And, you know, it's always wonderful to see the people. And I know that, you know, an addict alone is in bad company. So when I get stuck back into that distorted thinking, you know, I have to go back to my roots and continue to work the steps and continue to talk with my sponsor and to do other things that feed my soul. Because I have a life that is beyond my wildest dreams. I am somebody who can stand on my own. I can, you know, I am okay, that I know that I am whole. I am finding my way back. I have found my way back, and I am continued to find new parts of myself as I continue to work steps and share with other people that I can do anything. Narcotics Anonymous gave me everything, and it's the mainstay of everything that I do in my life, and I get to see it at work in my own kid's life, you know. And they apply this stuff. They live by spiritual principles. They know what they are. They know that there's always a home in Narcotics Anonymous if they should choose that. And you know, I get to still practice setting boundaries. Sometimes they're difficult with the kids, but you know, because I want what's best for them, but I have to allow them their journey. And I'm glad that, you know, my journey continues. You know, I have so many more new, exciting things to do, and I'm going to be here for a really long time. You know, I'm 60 years old. I'm really healthy. I have a whole life ahead of me. And, you know, maybe at some point I'll figure out dating. You know, didn't know what that's like, so that scares me. I run away from that. I go, yeah, no. But, you know, like I said, there's always new things to learn. And I'm glad that I have the support and people who love me to help me through it. Thank you.